This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Shut up and sit down.
Hello and welcome back to Fourth Down Focus. I am Dan Lundy, host of the podcast and founder of Fourth Down University. Before meeting our next guest, I'd like to remind you about our partners at Bet Online. They are the number one source for all your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. With up-to-the-minute odds, stats, and trends you can follow, your favorite team's path to the playoffs, with in-game live betting, contests, and all the best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop or your mobile device. Head to BetOnline today to be a part of the team, and remember to use our promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. Our next guest is a recurring guest. I had the pleasure of coaching him at the University of Missouri in 2015. Luke Jackson is now the head of our mental performance, and he is the founder of Clutch University. How are you doing, Luke Jackson?
Doing good today. Feel like it's been forever since we got to get on here and kind of hash it out and figure out some good things. So I'm happy to be back after the new year and the holiday rush has finally slowed down.
Yeah, it's been busy. I haven't told anyone this really, but we did an Airbnb in this really nice lake in North Carolina for the new year, and this family tried to charge us a $3,000 cleaning fee to get this like Sharpie, pink Sharpie dot out of the kitchen table that I'm not sure my daughter even did. So that like that's just one of the many things in life that it throws at you. And I thought of you because it's like you just sometimes you got to look at things like that as like a challenge to not overreact, because usually it's going to be resolved, right? Like my wife kind of took over that project of found a claim with Airbnb, and it looks like it's going to be off our bill or whatever, you know. But I thought of you, and there's a number of things in life going on right now. Like we might be moving a little bit, so that's just a stress, and you know. But you still want to do your professional stuff. You still want to do your personal stuff well, like be a good dad, and that's why I think it's important to bring guys like you on the show to talk about controlling thoughts, acknowledging that we all are vulnerable, and ways to overcome these things, hopefully.
Right. And I'm honestly not really sure how to take that one, because you're not the first person to say that when stressful situations come around to think of me. I'm like, is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Am I hard to be around in that way? Which is kind of a revealing thought of my own reactions there. But if in and of itself, whatever kind of thought that can kind of cue you into, especially in emotionally provoking situations, frustrating situations, whether it's a person, a memory, you know, something to ground you back into the situation. So that's like, all right, whether it's a pink Sharpie dot on the kitchen table at an Airbnb, or if, you know, we're going more to the sports, you know, if it's an athletic situation, missed a field goal, something like that. You know, what can you do to kind of ground yourself back in the situation and get things going in the right direction, get in that problem solving phase?
Yeah, I like what you said too, about, is it good or bad that people come to me when they think of me when things go wrong? And it's a great parallel with coaching, I think. And I taught in the classroom for years too. And I think that people need to acknowledge that they don't know everything. No one knows everything, right? Of course. But I think that we also need to be resourceful. Like you spend a lot more time thinking about the way to think about things and how to respond to those things and those thoughts. And I think a lot more about kicking and punting and snapping than most coaches at any level. And I fully realize that I don't know it all. I think that I'm immersed in it and I'm forever trying to get better with it. So I do like what you said. I mean, like, I think that's a good sign that people confide in you for what it is appears to be maybe a short-term bad thing.
Yeah, no, it certainly at the end of the day is more humbling than anything, especially if it has like kind of that positive twist. And I mean, different coaches, just any type of, influencer in somebody's life, they have those different perspectives and angles that they can take with other people, such as, think of someone like, I believe it's Bob Knight, the old basketball coach. And he has one, and he was always like, all right, so that's like the negative reinforcer. He's going to point out every flaw you have, but that's going to motivate you to be better. Then there's Coach K. That was kind of, and it's literally like red and blue. It couldn't have been more perfect. A more of the positive coach. It's going to be okay, buddy. Let's get out there and try again. Which I'm sure Coach K never phrased it quite as square as that, but it's all the same to be able to find that balance. Whether it's coaching, parenting, friendships, I mean, it's really kind of an interchangeable type of interpersonal, just interacting with people's style that people can adapt. And I mean, you'd be surprised where, quite literally with coaching, it's not a one size fits all. And kind of being able to find those blind spots, expand our scopes and perspectives. At the end of the day, kind of broadening your range, adding more tools into the metaphorical toolbox. It's a metaphor I always use, so that you have these additional resources to tap into in a more broader range of situations, which is a big part of what I was wanting to kind of talk about today specifically, is how we can broaden our tools.
I like that. Well, in terms of the toolbox and broadening it, I think that, like, if I could simplify what you just said, is I think you just one thing you definitely can't do to have all those things happen is quit. I think a lot of people quit, and I'm not saying about like quit life, but they quit several facets of their life, especially when they probably weren't supposed to. When they probably just had a little bit of adversity or a lot. I mean, it's a lot sometimes to deal with some things,
Sure.
but I think that we have to remind ourselves that, like, if it's important, and it's a priority, that you have to be willing to withstand more adversity in that particular said thing. Do you agree with that?
There's certainly an amount of resilience. I call it going through the growing pains of a situation, much like growing up, and anyone who's ever either been or worked with or has raised a teenager knows that there's definitely some growing pains going on in more than one way. And being able to kind of ride those waves so that it's like, all right, they're not going to thank me today. No, they're probably not going to thank me tomorrow or the week after that. Years down the road, when they've kind of leveled out neurologically, because that's just the growing pains of being an adolescent, eventually it's like, all right, the dots finally connect, both kind of rationally with that critical thinking as the emotions kind of calm down over the years. Not to get too much into kind of developmental psych, where it's like, all right, it's like there was a reason that Coach Lundy was pushing me on this particular skill on this given day, even though I sure as hell didn't want to do that. Finally, it's like the dots click. And something I talk about with clients all the time in my day job is it's kind of a looking at situations kind of through two lenses. There's the diagnosis and the prognosis. And to break that down really simply, diagnosis is why am I in the situation I'm in? How did I get to where I'm at today? And at times, it's not necessary to understand that if the prognosis, the plan being put in place to improve the situation, will be the same regardless of how you got to be where you're at on that specific day. So that kind of just ties back into I may not necessarily understand why I'm doing what I'm doing right now, but regardless of that lack of understanding, if there's a sense of trust with the coach or your parents or your teammates that you're working with, you'll be eventually, and you talked about being vulnerable earlier. There's nothing more vulnerable than putting your trust in somebody else. And within that situation, within practicing trust, you'd be surprised how far someone can get. And eventually, being able to kind of have that full circle moment, I was like, oh, light bulb goes off. That's why they had me doing that in the first place. It's a really powerful experience.
It's hard as a coach to be patient with that too. You know, and I get it. Attention spans and all these distractions that didn't exist when I was their age. But
Like
sometimes,
squirrels.
well, sure, squirrel, you know, and I'm not even 5 seconds into a thought that's about them. It's a very specific personal thing I want to address. And that's when I get frustrated is I fully expect when I'm speaking to five or six people that there's people disengaged because it's just human nature. I was one of those kids that was not engaged. I needed to be addressed personally. And then it was like, oh, the level of respect and attention, all those things were where they should be. So I think that's why I take it personally is because I expect everyone to be like me, right? That's kind of selfish that I'm harsher to a kid that can't take the one-on-one focus well. I get irritated by that because this is my time to give you instruction. We're not going to fix it today, right? And I think that's when a lot of kids get disengaged is you can't fix me today. And I'm very honest and candid about these things that no, what we're doing today is giving you a guide. You mentioned prognosis and diagnosing the short-term problems. I think that the ones that are going to make it in life, not just football, are the ones that are going to take that and give it a go. I mentioned quitting. I think a lot of kids quit before they even start. I think a lot of kids don't look at my film at all, which is crazy to me. I think a lot of kids don't change. They do the same, and they hope that over time that I will perfect these things that are not right, these things that I'm trying to get them away from and pull them from. And I know I'm going on off on a tangent, but to me, I'm just trying to be candid with you. It is very hard for me. My time is limited, and I put a lot into these kids, and I don't want to waste my time. I want to promote the right kids. I think that I can give kids opportunities, but I have to have them reciprocate the effort and the attention to detail and all these things. And I don't think I'm nice about it. I think I'd like to say I'm frank. I'm matter of fact, and sometimes it's going to hurt your feelings because it's true. Is that bad? I mean, is that something I need to get more, smile more? Like, 'cause again, like I think I am me and I have to be vulnerable and accept that I've got things I need to work on. I just don't know what I need to change.
Just let your smile be your umbrella, Dan. That's what they always say, right?
Yeah. See, I mean,
No, then that's like just a metaphor of smiling through the pain. And I think something that is even more important than kind of taking things at face value, which is what is being said specifically, and something I'm sure you've heard before, is how things are being said. What's the underlying emotional intention behind what people are saying? If somebody's starting to withdraw and their focus is becoming disengaged from training session, school, whatever, sure, like physiologically, we have a finite amount of attention span. And I always kind of parallel attention span because it's something we pay attention. It's currency, right? So it's like, how am I going to spend my money, spend my attention today? What am I going to be able to take in before it's like, oh, I've gone broke for today. I got to wait until tomorrow. Because you kind of got to recharge your body as well as your mind at the end of the day. But that's another story. But something that's true for whether, again, parents or coaches, anyone who's in a leadership type role, who's helping out others, teaching others. Is having a sense of patience and understanding of like what's the underlying reason of why this person is withdrawing. And it's something where if you have the trust and kind of that foundation or strength within the foundation of that relationship, I found if you shine a light on particular discrepancies like that, it's pretty easy to solve them in the moment versus, it's like, all right, I'm going to save this frustration for another day and then another day and another day. And then before you know it, this jar is full of pennies of frustration. You can just shake it around and you got to go to Coinstar to cash out versus being able to address those small problems in the day-to-day. I found in my day job as a therapist, when I'm coaching online or on the field, it's something that's been so impactful, and just to have that transparency with others, and it's really kind of leading by example in that way of like I'm being open and honest and transparent with you, and that grants others a permission to do the same. The power is in them making the choice to do so, taking that initiative to take that step forward. And maybe it is something new, and if anything's new or unfamiliar, it's like, oh, stay away from that. I'm going to go to what I'm used to, clinging to those habits, those routines that we have that we fall back on. But being willing to work with others through those changes, and at times it can be by leading example, can help people eventually get there. It's the slow game because it's like, all right, they have to take the plunge. Because you can push people to do things they don't want to do, which will help on that specific day. Doesn't mean that's going to be sustainable over time. But to kind of teach a man to fish versus just giving him a fish, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's just again, I sometimes I got to remember that you just I've got to listen to my own thoughts, and what I tell people is if it's hard and difficult, it's okay if it's something you want. And I will say, I'm getting older too. I'm almost my kids are almost as old as the kids I train now, which is
See
why,
that,
which is
see that in
wild.
the beard a little bit there.
Yeah, I mean, when they're all teenagers, it will be fully gray. For those that don't watch the show, I am definitely gray bearded now.
Touch of
I
gray.
like it though, little George Clooney. But
Salt and
no, I do
pepper.
appreciate it because I mean this is a podcast that initially was intended to be fourth down related, and I think that it's wild to me that how close like fourth down and football and all these cliches are to life in good and bad ways, right? But we often talk about in football that it's not going the way we want it to. It's hard. Football's hard, and it doesn't reward us daily. It makes us earn it. It makes us maintain. It makes us compete. We have to deal with loss. No one's been undefeated, right? Ever. I think it's neat. I think it's a good. I think sport is a good preparation for being an adult and all these things that are required of us to live a good life, but I do think that the mind is really what's going to make the difference for the good or for the bad. And I think it's still, for whatever reason, I think it's not fun to talk about because these are things that people have to open up and say, I am weak in this area with communication. Because I think that that's where it all lies, right? With me is whether it's a lack of communication with the parent, who then tells the kid things, and then that's it affects his attention to me on the field. All these things are possible, and I have to take ownership of that a little bit because I haven't addressed it. I just assume that they're going to come tomorrow with a better attitude and a better focus, but there's underlying things going on. And I think it's interesting you say that, but I also, I mean, I'll ask you because it's what I would ask you if I was going through a session with you. I also don't have a lot of time. I've mentioned that, right? Like if I see a kid, it's for 2 hours max. And I fully expect that they come before that 2 hours to warm up, but oftentimes they don't. And I'm irritated because now that's eating into the time that we get to spend on things that are important. So there's not a lot of time and dialogue to say, hey, what happened last time I saw you? Because I want to communicate to everyone, whether the parents there or whoever's taking them there, that this is important, and we're going to spend the whole amount of this time fully on you and your improvement and where your deficiencies lie and how to fix them. So maybe with me, it would have to be a phone call after, right? But I don't want to, right? Back to speaking about weaknesses. I hate doing that at night, because that takes time away from my kids. And these parents want to talk for 45 minutes. So I'm long-winded, but I'm trying to present to you a personal problem to show people that, oh, so Lundy's got stuff he's dealing with. Lundy doesn't have a perfect rapport with every kid. No, and I don't think anyone does. I'm just going to be really honest about it.
No, it's something where and as far as when it comes to just practicing patience with others, which, there's a finite amount of that too, right? Before our patience is expended. It's called being irritable, grumpy, cranky, got something stuck up your knee, you know what, however you want to phrase it, it happens. And it's more so in those moments when we're being crankety crotchety, if you will, what can be done to kind of salvage my own personal well-being, which then reciprocates to those around me. It's kind of the law of the bad apple, which, you take one bad apple spoils a bunch. As you can tell, I'm a man of metaphors. Just seems to come out in the way I speak. And being able to salvage one's own emotional integrity from the inside out, and it's something where, it kind of draws back to what we were talking about earlier, is you never know what someone's going through. And at times, especially in a world, as through the eye of a coach, where your focus is so external, we can lose track of the own stressors we have going on in our own lives and how that can become internalized and a part of us. And being able to not only have that insight of what's going on around us, but within us too, can help kind of keep us in check. So that in those moments where we blow our top, it happens. Can it, is it still a salvageable moment? And more times than not, it is. And being able to make the best of that particular situation. And it would be great if life was something where you could take it from a preventive standpoint. It's like, all right, this happened. This was an issue. It's not going to happen again. The defenses are up. I'm at the ready here. However, it's more of a responsive tool because life is way too complicated and spontaneous. So it's like, how can we think on our feet in situations when things don't go according to plan? Step one doesn't lead to step two. Step two doesn't lead to step three. Life is not linear at all. I think I've heard you say that a few times.
Yeah.
It's zigzags and goes all over the place. So having that flexibility and really just kind of grace and patience with ourselves as well as others, certainly to be serious in moments where it's warranted, but also to have be able to let the shoulders down a little bit too. You've heard the saying, laugh it off at times. Let it roll off the shoulder. It's like, all right, I'm gonna be able to respond to this in a different way today. There's always another opportunity coming around the corner to be better, not even necessarily tomorrow, but in the next moment, in the next hour, in the next interaction. And I think it could come down to expectations at the end of the day. Are your expectations known and not even necessarily enforced, because it sounds a little bit brutal, but maybe reinforced. At the other end of the day, what's the payout? What do I get in response to this? And it may not even necessarily be something that can be verbally explained for it really to sink in for people. Another saying, go figure, a smart person learns from their own mistakes, a wise person learns from the mistakes of others. And so sometimes I see it with kids all the time. They have to make their mistakes, they have to sink before they can swim. And with that, at times it can be hard, and it certainly can test patience where it's like, I see what you're doing. Why don't you see it? Take the blinders off, pal. Let it loose. But sometimes people have to go through their own experiences and in their own time and in their own way before they get to where they need to go.
Yeah, it's frustrating as a parent. You want to correct everything, but I'm learning because they're all young still. My oldest is 7. That there are a lot of things you just have to let it go. You can't micromanage it. But again, as a coach, that there are certain things that I think that you are doing the athlete a disservice if you don't micromanage certain things. I mean, I but you can do it in a positive way, right? I choose to do it in a very short, succinct way, and I'm repetitive. Teaching helped me a lot with how to talk to an adolescent, expectations of how often I need to say something to actually get something done. That was alarming to me coming out of college. I taught young. I taught at 23 was my first job, and I thought everyone was about to go to college, like the way they'd handle the classroom. And I forgot very quickly that it was high school. Like these kids are, they need a lot of structure, a lot. And I think most people do. I don't think anyone really loses that they operate better with some structure, with a plan, with techniques and strategies you teach to be mindful that we're humans and we're going to go south and we're going to have some highs, we're going to have some lows again. But the important thing is to be mindful of how to get back to the place you need and want to be, right? Is that correct?
Absolutely, being able to trust oneself and your support group for better or for worse, to be able to ride the waves, like you said, those highs and lows and in betweens. And I'm actually really glad you brought up structure, because that is something where we are creatures of habit by nature. And that's something I'd love to dive deeper into right now, even where, as it relates to structure, routine, and habits, whether it's, for general personal well-being or if it's athletically based, it is such an impactful tool and resource that can allow us to have, something. It's almost an automatic process to fall back on, so that in those high stress moments, it's like, I've been trained and prepared for this moment. And I've talked about Tom Brady on the show before, not a personal friend, just a fan. And how he, when asked, how do you prepare differently for a Super Bowl, just another game, he has that much trust in his process of preparation, where he's like, I know I got this in the bag. I know I've prepped and what I needed to do. I don't need to change anything. I'm playing in the damn Super Bowl. Okay, I've made it to the pinnacle here. So why change a working system? But it also comes into finding that system that works. And so there are three R's of habit formation I wanted to run through with you, and just to kind of give the people some nuggets to chew on at home. And the first starts with the reminder. This is the trigger itself of the behavior or skill that you're trying to work on and put into place. So that may come from the coach. It's like, all right, this is what we're working on, getting our plant depth perfectly today. And rolling in through the heel, out on that outer part of your foot, and being able to have that perfectly parallel as it needs to be with the ball, just to geek out on plant depth for a second. Then it gets into the routine, the second part there. That is the behavior of the skill itself. It's done, we've talked the talk, let's walk the walk, let's put it into place here. So now we're practicing the skill. And then the carrot at the end of the stick, the reward, the last R here, the benefit that is gained through doing this particular behavior or skill. So it's like, oh, that's why the dots have connected now, light bulb moments going off. That's why we're doing this in the first place. I remember specifically back in Arkadelphia, long time ago, I had totally lost my hip torque on my kickoffs, and my kickoffs were 10 yards shorter than they should have been. And Coach Lonnie worked with me on that specifically. Changed my steps entirely. I'm like, I feel like a newborn horse here, just like I can get my circle of gravity. Like, I was like, what's going on here? Learn to walk. But it was a matter of fact where I was able to open my hips up and then close them abruptly. So it's like that was the reward. I was being able to get my power, get that pop back in my kickoffs, just to give a specific example. But to be able to have the reminder, this is what we're working on, the routine. Let's put it into place and practice the skill and the reward, the payoff at the very end, the success.
That was a good time, to be honest. It's one of my favorite times. That was a while ago, but I will say that the guys like you, there was a few, there's probably, I don't know, there was quite a few college and pro guys there. I would say anywhere from 60 to 80 came through in those few weeks. There was only 5 or 10 of you guys that really put in the work, in my opinion, it took in terms of tempo and staying linear, as mentioned, and actually finding one's own step pattern and when they transition. That takes a lot of off-ball work. And if people listening to this don't know, that means without the football. That means, like you just said, the reward isn't there yet because I'm kicking on air. I'm focusing on my stride lengths. I'm focusing on staying straight. I'm focusing on using my arms. And I think that was a great parallel you just drew is, that's where the trust comes in, right? Because I'm not going to do all these seemingly mundane things that, like, I know how to use my arms. No, you don't. Actually, when you kick off, not you particular, but most people shut off one of their arms and it pulls them to offline. I'm getting somewhere, but what I'm saying is I think that I've learned since then that I can only go that far with a few, and that's what I'm most grateful for. That's in my opinion, coaching. Digging really deep and realizing that this is something that may take a little time to overcome, but you and I can do this. I'm not doing it by myself, you know, which I also used to think. It's all on me. I'm helping these kids. I'm fixing them. No, I learned very quickly. If I back to sustainability, if I think like that, I wouldn't have lasted. I knew I learned quickly enough, and back to my resentment and why I get so frustrated is I've done it for 22 years now, and when I see a kid putting a wall up, not sure why the wall exists, and I guess I'm not giving enough effort to bring the wall down so I can pull the best out of them. So this is helpful today to really challenge myself to maybe, like you said earlier, and it oftentimes is this, that we don't know what people go through. We see everyone's highlight reel, right? We don't see what goes on. We don't see all the lows. And some people have some incredibly low lows that they walk around with. They internalize it. So I really do appreciate you making me think of that, because it's exactly right. It really makes sense of our discussion up to this point.
Yeah, and I'm really glad I actually bring up that additional point of not being sure the not only what people are going through, but the time in which someone's particular improvement, you know, the time it will take to get someone from point A to point B can be very different per person. But something I wanted to share on top of just kind of routine and habits is the timeline of that and what it typically can look like just by looking at some of the statistics. For physical conditioning in and of itself, we're in the off season programs for many football schools and teams. So winter workouts, holy cow. I'm having more flashbacks just thinking about it. Mat drills, gun club, oh, but it groomed me into the person I am today. Trial by fire, I would say. But for physical conditioning, just you can think about just like cardiovascular conditioning or training in the weight room, it can take upwards of around 3 weeks for that conditioning to eventually start to set in. And then as it begins to set in, the odd thing is within 6 days of going without a particular type of exercise or what you're specifically conditioning for, you know, trying to build endurance in a given area, such as cardiovascular health, it can take 3 weeks of work can be undone within 6 days. And that process means so it's, I mean, that's just the life we live in. We could build up a business over 10 years and it could be torn down in 60 seconds. If that's not a parallel for life, I don't know what is.
Sure.
But the same is both for our own conditioning and endurance, is the same for our own mental capacity as well. We're talking about muscle memory. So there's technical changes in sport. Such as that 3 week period, it's the same thing. It's around 21 days for a new habit to begin, just to begin to be ingrained within our neurobiological makeup. And it can take upwards of 3 months for it to be firmly grasped within our muscle memory, within our neurobiological makeup. So for athletes who rely on muscle memory in their technical skill, which holy cow, holy mackerel, is one of my old coaches used to say. I was like, holy mackerel, that puts a date on you. Anyway, sidebar being over. For athletes who rely on muscle memory, which is certainly kickers and specialists, and especially in those big moments, you know, you want to have a deeply rooted, think about it like a habit or like a plant, a deeply rooted habit in your muscle memory. For your routine, for those habits you rely on in those big moments, so that in those high stress situations, you fall back on your training. You're not thinking consciously, you are subconsciously automatic going on, or that's what you're relying on. So the takeaway here is to be decisive, especially in the off season here that we're in right now, about the changes you make, commit to the process, because it takes time for those plants to blossom and bloom into those wonderful skills that you're trying to work towards, and embracing the growing pains that come with it, and being able to stay consistent afterwards to maintain progress. 21 days for a new habit to start to be built and ingrained into us, 6 days of going without any form of training for it to start to become unwoven and undone. Not only stay committed to the process and maintain over time.
I think my takeaway from a nerdy kicking perspective would be the dry runs. You know, we talk about these things a lot, and I think the higher the level, the more they acknowledge the importance of them, because it's what you're saying. I don't necessarily need to kick ball far, because that is a finite thing going on. We can get hurt. We're going to get older, and the older we get, the less frequently we can kick ball far, right? But one thing that I can assure you is, it's your kickoff is, and your field goals for that matter, and your punts, everything that goes on prior to the foot on the ball is going to result in where ball goes and how far. So what you just said, there's another really good parallel is, you're going to have to frequently put yourself in a position that's tedious, right? Just like life, where you're going to have to go through things that are kind of a requirement, just like changing a car's oil, you know, just like there's just a number of things I can relate to that I don't want to do today. I have to go weed after this, you know. Do I want to go? Do I want to go weed? Absolutely not. But hey, back to what you said earlier, there is a carrot when I get to go look before sundown and bring my wife out and say, hey, look, how pretty does our house look tonight? You know, like that. There's so many parallels to it. We're not talking about kicking today. We are talking about everybody and anything, I think, right? Really?
The reach is absolutely broad. We certainly narrow our scope based around athletics and sport, but as far as, and I've said this before, as it relates to performance of any type, in any setting with any particular person, it is a very broad reach. Whether it's, like you said, picking weeds and it's like, oh, this sucks within the moment, which is certainly kind of the stick poking you behind of just like, ah, it has to get done. But then the reward is getting to share that progress at the end. With those that you care about, you know, it's certainly something where there's that personal satisfaction, that personal reward specific to me, but I know something that's highly motivating for myself is being able to share progress and success with those around me and that I love and care about. And to fall back on a metaphor as we wrap up here, go figure, or an old saying, an old wise tale, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together.
Ooh.
Something to keep in mind with the company that you keep. And it certainly is something where on those days where I can't lift myself up, I know I have loved ones around me that I can fall back on that'll pick me up, slap me on the back and say, hey, get your butt to work and keep me going.
I love that you ended on that, because I'll end on this too, is like we deal with recruiting a lot, and that's really ugly time right now, because now we're dealing with kids that still have opportunities, but there's only a few opportunities left, and it gets really selective at this point. I think it's who you keep, the company you keep, you know, like, is there dialogue going on with, you know, your kicking coaches, your high school coaches, or your parents involved? When, because right now, the high school kids that listen to this show, I think like that's their biggest pitfall right now in life, is overcoming where I'm going to be next year. Am I going to be a student athlete? Am I going to be an athlete? And what you said is important, that don't do this alone. I think we all can fall into that trap of, well, no one knows about kicking, so no one in my family can help. It's not true. If you guide them and be like, hey, I've got to get some of these things done, can you help me add these coaches tonight? Can you find this guy's Twitter handle on, you know, you do the Google mom, hey, dad, you know, do this. Hey, Coach Lundy, you know, can you contact? We can't find his. I think that we oftentimes internalize and try to take it all on, because we think that, A, we don't want to burden someone. But if you have the right circle, like you said, that really shouldn't be a thought, because I think you realize that your circle is here to help. Is that correct? Is that just how you view your circle as important?
Absolutely. To be able to fill in, everyone has blind spots and shortcomings. And that's where having the right team, the right group on hand can pick up the slack, and really accent your strengths, accent the areas of improvement. I won't say weaknesses because we can always get better. It's a process-oriented system we're all living in. And to be able to have, and that, you know, there's, you know, trust and vulnerability within that too. Certainly keep those close to are time tested and war ready with you. And with that in mind, you'll certainly be able to go the distance. And to be able to have that sense of humility of realizing that asking for help and seeking assistance from others is not a point of weakness. It is a strategic strength. This is something I know that I will struggle night and day to do, but this person can have done in 5 minutes. It's okay to seek help. It's even in, I encourage it because people can go much further and it can be much more efficient. And everyone's process and that lifelong pursuit of our own success, happiness, joy, and fulfillment, to be able to lean on others, expand our own horizons, and hey, maybe have a few laughs along the way, right?
Amen to that. Well, on that note, can you just really quickly share a few ways? I'll put some things in the notes as well, but just a few ways people could reach you online, I guess.
Sure. Certainly been more active on social media these days. So I'm on Instagram personally, as well as with the mental performance company I work under with Clutch University, at Clutch University MC on Instagram. I'm on TikTok now. I drank the Kool-Aid. I made the plunge. Look up Clutch University Mental Performance on TikTok. I'm on there as well. And then lastly, I do have a Twitter presence, largely in part, or not even, oh, I can't even say that anymore. X.
X,
We're on X
you're
now, yeah.
Xer.
you look at Clutch University, you're at Luke P. Jackson. You can find me on there as well. And then all my contact info is on the Fourth Down U website as well.
Thank you, Luke. I really, really appreciate your time. I'm gonna find ways to chop this up. You do a really good job of creating shorts as it is. If you guys follow him, he'll give you a thought in a minute or less about something to just to think about, take away, and maybe go find some more, do some more research on it. But I really hope people subscribe to your stuff and maybe just interact with you. I think that's another thing that people don't do enough of, is they assume that, you know, people like you and I who contribute content, I think we value the interaction, the dialogue, because that's the feedback. It's like, well, man, five people comment on that one part of my show. That must be like the direction I need to go a little bit. That, you know, there's supply and demand. That seems to be that's the only way. So if you do follow Luke, interact with him. I don't think that he would mind if he could be a resource for you. Thanks again for joining us at Fourth Down Focus. Please give us a 5-star rating, a review, subscribe to the show, and share it with a friend. If you have any questions or suggestions for future topics or guests, or if you just have feedback for the podcast, you can reach me, Dan Lundy, in several ways. My website is fourthdownu.com, and on social media, you can find me at fourthdownu. That's 4THDOWNU.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.